If you follow true crime, be sure to follow True Crime Today wherever you download podcasts. There we cover everything in the world of true crime, like major stories such as Chad and Lori Daybell or Alex Murdaugh, to smaller, lesser-known hometown stories that make a major impact on their communities. We take a deep look at the people, places, and psychology in real time that all come together to create these stories. Search True Crime Today wherever you get your podcasts and press subscribe.
True Crime Today.
This is the ongoing story of a small Idaho town and its residents, a tightly knit community that hasn't seen a murder since 2015, an environment where one thought they could feel safe and secure until a quadruple homicide stole the lives of four young souls on a mid-November evening, leaving far more questions than answers. Where will the investigation lead and how do we get there? This is the University of Idaho Murders podcast. Four killed for what?
Welcome to this episode of the podcast. Thank you for joining us. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any of our updates, breaking updates as we get them, and longer form episodes like this where we're going to go through actually quite a bit that's come out throughout the day today. It's interesting because when we look at this, Sean Reed joining me, I'm Tony Bruschi. It's interesting when they release information or when the Moscow police information, because it looks like a lot of paragraphs of stuff. And then you get there and you read it and it's like, oh, they found new ways to reword things. It's frustrating to say the least. I mean, and that's from someone obviously who's just way out here, just talking and reporting about it. I can only imagine just what those families and the people in that community as well are going through when they see something and they think, oh, this, maybe we got something here, and not a ton, but we'll go through some interesting observations that are new as of the afternoon, and the Moscow police really kind of trying to correct, I think, the ship a little bit in terms of what the knowledge is out there. But first, have you seen the interview, Sean, with Kaylee's father, Kaylee Gonsalves? He did an interview with the New York Post today that we don't have audio on because it's the New York Post, but we're going to go through this. Lots of statements made that seemed even more blunt than what was said over the weekend.
I did, and I think we are at a breaking point where we had talked in past episodes to see the calmness of family members, of friends talking about the events that occurred in such a calm demeanor. And as we roll on with this investigation and no hard facts are found to comfort members of the public, friends, but most importantly, families, and specifically Kaylee's dad, I think he has hit a breaking point, rightfully so.
Yeah.
And is just being extremely blunt. Obviously, there's a lot of emotion that is fueling that, but we reporting this to you and you consuming, wanting answers, imagine the frustration that we have. Tie in that your daughter is one of the victims. I can't even fathom, but he is really putting law enforcement to require and mandate them, hey, you got to give us more information, and if you are not going to, I'm going to take things into my own hands.
And that's what we see in a lot of these cases, quite honestly. If things get slow, private investigators get called in. And sometimes you also have, you know, obviously people out there that are searching through this online as amateur investigators. But I want to go to the article in the New York Post today, and we'll just kind of go through it piece by piece. The grieving father of Kaylee Gonsalves, this is his own words on what's going on. Said he's working with his own private investigators because he fears the cops in the case are too inexperienced. This is from Steve. Steve Gonsalves, he raised his fears on Sunday in this interview with the Post, saying he was also concerned that one suspicious character had been ruled out too quickly, seemingly allowing him to flee the country without taking a DNA test. This is what Steve is asserting in this article with the New York Post, which is interesting because this is the first time I've heard anyone directly related to the case or the the deceased in this horrible matter speak out about that. And what I'm wondering is, I think the same thing a lot of people have been wondering about that rumor that's been online, is do we know that an individual left the country? That's been flying around online quite a bit through the rumor mills. And I don't know the answer to that. I would only assume that if one is to speak about this, especially him, out loud, that, you know, within the circles of folks right there in that community, probably have a lot more better knowledge on some of the inner workings of who's where, who's come back, who's not.
And we have to defer to that. There's also been the talk of Kaylee having a stalker. This time, the official release, no victim has been identified, but they have added information that there was an incident of her being followed into a bar, an individual following her back to her car. She noticed, they then walked away. So there is information. And again, we just want it to be more concrete, but there seems to be, as more pressure, more cracks of the case unfold.
And authorities have even commented on that. And we'll get to that in a few moments, because we'll go to the update from the Moscow police that they released this afternoon in just a few moments. Steve, going back to the story in the Post, he lashed out at the lack of leads coming from cops who backtracked on their claims that the killer appeared to be targeting at least one of the four roommates and have yet to even suggest a profile for the likely slasher. And lots of us have been talking about a likely profile. We're going to be talking with a guest later in the show that works in that area and has quite a bit of insight about the type of character that this likely will turn out to be. Again, it's, you know, just lots of folks putting their minds together and speaking from experiences, not just wild guessing, but we'll get to that in a little bit. One of the murder squad officers is only 26, according to Steve. He complained, meaning that he was only 19 in the sleepy city of Moscow when they had their last slaying in 2015. So he says, quote, "So they're just inexperienced, and I don't want anyone making mistakes in my child's case," Gonsalves told the Post. Also, blasting the officers as not exactly the most tech savvy people. I don't blame this dad whatsoever. I think I'd be doing the exact same sort of thing if I was in his shoes. Mainly because it does feel, take this whole case out of the equation. So many things in life today feels like you have to hold the hand of the professionals that are supposed to be doing it in order to get things done. I felt that way about a lot of things in the last couple of years, from medical professionals to police and things of that nature. And not all of them are, you know, not all of them are incompetent or bad, but it just feels like more than not, if you want to get things done, sometimes you really have to push. So I'm happy that he's holding them accountable. As well as his own fears, Gonsalves said that he started working with private investigators because there were enough insiders telling us that we should be concerned about the lack of any clear leads in the November 13th murders of his 21-year-old daughter and her three friends. The Post goes on to say that Steve said, "I talked to detectives, making it clear he was keeping away from internet sleuths," who actually dismissed as Hollywood shit. One of the private detectives I talked to has 50 years in the game, he said, of his outside help. The gumshoe told him that he had to break cases when there wasn't DNA, suggesting younger cops rely on it far too much. "We're trying to give them the benefit of the doubt," he said, the police investigators. Steve also did say that he still has hopes that cops will be heroes and prove him wrong by ultimately emerging with breakthroughs that do come through and solve the case. He also goes on to say, "I apologize. I'll come out and say these guys had amazing DNA or some evidence for the good of them. I was giving them shit and I take it back. I'd love to be wrong and we can get this guy," he told the Post. Gonsalves said he is only speaking up because of his alarm at the lack of leads, including the refusal to release an official profile of the likely slasher in the November 13th attacks. "That would give all these other girls that are walking around that community somebody to look out for," Gonsalves told the Post. "Don't make more victims," he warned. He admitted that he also has fears that a hoodie-wearing man spotted lingering near his daughter and her best friend, Madison Mogan, also 21, was ruled out too quickly for killing the pair and their two friends, according to the Post. Some people claimed to us and said that he's out of the country. He didn't take a DNA test, he said. This, again, that's from Steve and the reporting of the New York Post. When you break down the way that he's speaking there, it's, I don't know if he's speaking factually as if he knows that somebody was out of the country or didn't take a DNA test, or he's just speaking in terms of generality and what he's heard. I would imagine at this point, if I were him, I would be almost probably speaking far out of turn, because you're not getting much sleep. You're going nuts trying to live through this nightmare. And I would think it would be easy to say things that maybe don't necessarily have a lot of solid backing to them, but maybe there is. Maybe there's more to this that he knows that we don't.
What's interesting is when this crime occurred, the law enforcement, the coroner, everybody directly involved with this was so loose on what they did communicate to the public, let alone families. So you combine a shortage of leads, a shortage of person of interest slash suspects, and you're even now as not tight-lipped as you were when this first happened, you are increasingly less and less communicative to not only the public, but to me. And the only information that does come out contradicts itself. So the fact of the matter of how Kaylee's dad can maintain sanity at this point, I think he's grasping at straws slash calling out everyone to hold them accountable. But you have to imagine, as far as talking about the age of these law enforcement officials that are working on this case, there's a lot of entities that are working together on the state level, on the federal level. So perhaps on the local level in the city of Moscow, there is folks that are not accustomed to dealing with many homicides, as many of them were not on the force the last time there was a murder in the town of Moscow, Idaho. But you have a lot of resources that are working together that have more years in the game. And you just have to hope that they are guiding, showing the folks that this perhaps is their first murder investigation. This is how we do it. And they're working together.
One would hope so. And I join him, Steve, in that thought of at the end of the day, we hope we're all wrong. We hope that the criticism that's going out there that a lot of our people are feeling about the investigation is completely wrong, that they're going to come through some point and say, look, this is why we couldn't say anything. And everyone can go, thank goodness. I think we'd all be happy to say we were wrong in those opinions.
Steve,
go ahead.
We got to remind ourselves that, number one, you or I, not experts in the world of investigating murders.
No.
And we also need to remind ourselves, as much as we almost get infatuated and addicted to finding out information, many of us aren't either. And at this point, this is something where, whether we are a CSI expert or not, there have been other cases, other investigations that are similar, that at least you can look to, well, in this case, that happened. In this case, that happened. Sadly, we've almost become immune when there is some type of mass shooting in this country. Oh, well, it was this. Oh, well, it was a hate crime, etc. This is something that is now approaching the third week.
Fourth.
And there are no leads coming up on the fourth week. Yeah. So, you know, it's so difficult for us as a society when there has become so much crime and homicides and people lives lost for no reason. These four victims were living their life. They were bettering themselves. They were going to college. They were weeks away from graduating. And they were, their lives were taken of no fault of their own. And I think for us right now, as much as we are addicted to wanting to dig deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, we have nothing to compare this to. And sadly, we want to give everybody a benefit of the doubt. But as our attention span only magnifies on who, what, where, why, it's becoming more difficult to not turn and almost, you know, become negative to those that are conducting the investigation, wondering, what the heck are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, and it's a fair question. I think mainly more so not because people haven't gotten It's mainly because people haven't gotten straight information is what I'm trying to say, because it's been this, then back to that, then back to this. And that really, anytime people are constantly contradicting themselves, it's going to make anyone question it. Steve goes on to say about the individual that they're questioning that has been the fodder for a lot of online rumors and hypotheses over the last couple of weeks. He says, so we would like police to tell us what his alibi was, he said, saying he'd be able to move on if they could confirm it was solid. That's a big one. And I do wonder, they said it the other night in one of the shows about, I don't know why they can't at least tell us, the family, the alibis of these people, at least, you know, so we can confirm. And it does make you wonder, the vague mixed messaging that's been going on. Does make you wonder, why can't they? Or is it, if they were to say the alibi, everyone would go, really? That's the alibi you went with? That's all you got. And how did you confirm it? On a phone call. Okay, that's it? I wonder how much of that is what happened at the very beginning. And those are the moments that you can't get back. Those are the moments you can't bring more FBI people in now and somehow correct it. I just wonder how many things at that very early moment we're just kind of overlooked, and now we're sitting here and people aren't going to say something because they don't want to look bad. Steve said also, I've heard people talk to reporters and say that they'd be way more scared if it wasn't targeted. He says some people think that means the victims were gambling, or they were doing drugs, or they were doing something that really made them come after them. He said of the lack of info. And targeted doesn't mean that someone is doing something bad, or that there's a, it just means somebody got focused on an individual and targeted them, or a group of them. It doesn't necessarily mean, you know, there's something nefarious going on here with these kids, because nothing points to that whatsoever. And I think that's what we're going to find eventually, is someone infatuated with somebody. I've brought up the word incel before. More and more people are bringing that up, of that type of a profile. Someone that couldn't handle some sort of rejection, somebody that really didn't have the self-esteem, somebody that hated women and had that personality type profile, I think is what we're going to be dealing with here, with the amount of rage and the amount of people that are close to them that have really truly been cleared. I think it's going to be something that someone may kind of know of, but has no idea that person knew that much about them.
What I'm really interested in is, as we go on with this following of this fluid investigation, is talking to experts in both the law enforcement world.
We're going to talk to somebody here in just a moment on this episode as well that has some insight into that, as well as the profile of the individual that he feels is likely involved, based on similar type cases that do exist, that are out there. But we'll talk about that shortly. Moscow police also today giving us an update in the afternoon and stating this: there have been statements and speculations about this case, victim injuries, cause of death, evidence collection and processing, and investigative techniques. With the active criminal investigation, law enforcement has not released additional facts to the family or the public. We recognize the frustration this causes and that speculation proliferates in the absence of facts. However, we firmly believe speculation and unvetted information is a disservice to the victims, their families, and our community. The Moscow Police Department is committed to providing information whenever possible, but not at the expense of compromising the investigation and prosecution. That's point number one. So going out of their way, it seems, to point at Steve a little bit and say, we didn't tell you anything. I don't like this. I don't like this. I don't know. It feels like there's this attitude. We didn't say anything. We didn't say anything wrong either. I don't know. It seems a little passive aggressive.
What's interesting is the topic of discussion is not a... I mean, there's passive aggressive, there's dynamics of a conversation in any walks of life, whether it could be a colleague of ours dealing with an HR issue. The fact of the matter is, this is a father of a victim killed, and we have law enforcement. But again, when you pull back the curtain of just basic communication 101, nobody wants to feel as though they're doing their job improperly. Nobody yeah. wants to feel alienated that they inadvertently stepped in it and now they're trying to backtrack. There's so much happening.
There's a lot. There's a lot that's coming in. And they do. I mean, it's interesting that the second point in their point, or their third point rather, in this whole thing is telling us how many tips they've received from phone calls to digital media. Detectives continue investigating what occurred from approximately 9 p.m. on November 12th to 1:45 a.m. on November 13th. They're focusing in on the frat party that was going on, any interactions, contacts, direction, method of travel, or anything abnormal could add context to what has occurred. And this is something we had talked about a little bit earlier, and I think this is what has been alluded to, even by the parents of a stalker of Kaylee. The Moscow police say this: using tips and leads, investigators have identified an incident involving Kaylee at a local business, which may have been the stalker reference she made to friends and family. In mid-October, two males were seen inside a local business. They parted ways. One male appeared to follow Kaylee inside the business as she exited to walk towards her car. The male turned away and did not appear he made any contact with her. Detectives contacted both males and learned the two were attempting to meet women at the business. This was corroborated through additional investigation. Based on available information, detectives believe this was an isolated incident and not an ongoing pattern of stalking. No evidence suggests the two males were involved in the murders. Investigators continue looking into information about Kaylee having a stalker. Information about a potential stalker or unusual occurrences should go through the tip line. So that's something that that's amazing that they were able to get down to that very specific incident from a few months ago and nail it down to who was involved and get that information and clear them. But I'm wondering if there was something more than that moment, if there really was more of a stalker type thing going on that others are aware of. And that would be something where I would imagine there'd be some information out there of people that were friends, acquaintances with them, maybe just observing, oh, there's that creepy guy again. You can tell he kind of likes her or something. And that sort of information can help lead in some directions for some sort of questioning. A lot of requests about the dog as well, found at the residence on the morning of November 13th. Police finally answering some of the questions that we've had there. Arriving officers entered the residence and found the deceased victims. During the search of the home, a dog was found in the room where the crimes had not been committed. So this clears up all those questions of, was the dog, you know, licking blood? Did he have stuff on him? Was the dog there when it happened? Officers did not find any evidence on the dog, and there was no indication the animal had entered the crime scene. The dog was taken to animal services and released to a responsible person. While the dog was in the house when officers arrived, it has not been determined where the dog was physically located when the murders took place. So I would say right there, that probably wasn't the best idea of moving the dog to animal services immediately. While the dog may not have been splattered in blood, DNA evidence, things of that nature, it doesn't need to be that evident. So I would take that as maybe something, but we'll never know. Even Steve said the chain's been broken. They go on to say at this time, no suspect has been identified, and only vetted information that does not hinder the investigation will be released to the public. There is speculation without factual backing, stoking community fears, and spreading false information. We encourage referencing official releases for accurate information and updated progress. Well, we've always hoped we could do that, but sometimes that itself has been contradictory. Hopefully they have that under wraps. To talk more about the profile of the individual that may be involved, we're joined by former university lecturer, self-described expert on disasters, domestic violence, international politics, terrorism, school shooters, and urban crime, Jerome Ellman. Jerome, give us a little insight as to your thoughts and what brings your expertise to the table on this case.
I first heard of the case. I'm actually working on two other murder cases in which a knife was involved. One is two very infamous cases, actually, the OnlyFans model murder case in Miami, and the murder case of Katie Janice at a park in Atlanta. And when I heard this, it got my attention because it's a college campus. And unfortunately, college campuses have become very dangerous, particularly for women. You may remember the so-called incel killer from the University of California, Santa Barbara, that first killed his roommates, and then he targeted women in a sorority house a few years ago. And he's called incel because he's an incelibate killer, saying that he's, you know, he doesn't have dates, he doesn't have a girlfriend, and it's not voluntary. He can't get a girlfriend. And that has happened all over the country and also in Canada. And you have these cases where women were targeted. First of all, I do believe the women were targeted.
All of the women were targeted? Or do you feel it was just one that was targeted in this case?
No, the person was very comfortable with that house. He knew the layout of that house. He knew from the beginning. That's obvious because you have a person using a knife, not a gun. That's very personal. That means that person would only take, you have to imagine the amount of time it took for him to kill four people or them to kill four people. So a person is only going to do that when they're sure no one else is going to come into the house while they're committing the crime, that they're very familiar to where exactly those people were at. But you're going to find out that's what it was. He was targeting the women.
The incel profile is something that I brought up very early on in this case, and with not a lot of evidence other than just the seemingly viciousness of the attack towards the females and the lack of there being really a clear link to anybody that was truly close to them, boyfriends, good friends, things like that. It seems like a lot of them had been fairly cleared and with very legitimate alibis. My thought initially on this was it's somebody that's not necessarily close to them, but knows them, knows of them, maybe has been in contact, maybe has been rejected by one or more, and has this sick predatory nature to them because of their hate towards women, because of their feeling that they can't attract women. Is that the type of individual that you think we're dealing with here in this case?
Well, you're absolutely right. That is the most logical and professional conclusion that I'm hoping that the investigators there are going down the same path that you're going down. You're 100% right. That person either had been in that house before or had been watching that house for a while. Mm-hmm. That's just as simple as that. He's exactly, he didn't come in there to kill the guys. He was willing to do it, but he was targeting the women. That's going to be found out. And again, the police, there's no way they have not had contact with this person. Actually, they need to go back and restart the case because based on the statements from the police that they've said, like the one that just really, I don't know where it came from, where they're saying, well, they don't know if the house was targeted or the people in the house was targeted.
What has been being missed? What are we not seeing even prior to these murders actually taking place? Was there evidence out there? Was there signs that this person was plotting or planning something like this, in your opinion?
Absolutely. 100%. 100%. You can bet that person, those females have had contact with that person. That person has been there staking out the house, reconning the house, whole nine yards before. He just didn't pop up and do it. The other two murder cases that I'm working on right now, that's exactly what the case. What the authorities have missed solves the case. Then you have this other issue. You have statements being made, particularly by authorities and so-called experts, that are completely nonsense. They're in no way based on fact. And that leads the police on a wild goose chase. again, the best thing that they can do is hand the evidence from day one back to people with all of the electronic evidence that would exist, all of the physical evidence that exists. There's no way in the world this case shouldn't have been solved. Like I said, 2-3 days maximum.
Is it because they're holding on to it and trying to decipher it themselves? Would it be beneficial to them to release more information to the public? Or is this a case where holding back, in many cases that is done in law enforcement, with the idea that we're not going to go after the person until we know we can keep them behind bars, rather than just a small, you know, misdemeanor crime or something that we give them for a 24 or 48 hour hold. We want to be sure we can go in guns blazing before actually making an arrest.
They should put out more information, period, because withholding information at this point, you're not only risking never solving this case, but people like this tend to turn into spree killers. That means they'll just start to kill everybody that they can get to. You know, that happened with Johnny Versace. In that case, the University of California Santa Barbara case, that happened. No, they need to put out the information, because I'm telling you, it's going to hear, oh, okay, hold on a minute. That's not what that person told me, mm-hmm. right? Somebody's going to hear or see something out of place. And the reason that the police are holding back right now, and I've seen this, unfortunately, too many times, you have incompetency and you have ego, right? Mm-hmm. You want to solve the case, period. That's your only priority. And in this case, two heads are definitely better than one. In this case, 50. Do you need to have other people look at the evidence? Because obviously they've blown it to this point.
Did they move far too fast in the beginning to dismiss so many people so quickly? I mean, it really felt like within 24 hours, people were being dismissed left and right. Some with very logical, dismissal of being a suspect because they could physically pinpoint them in another location. Others seem to almost be dismissed just on their word.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that. When I heard that, warning bells went off. Number one, unless that person can prove they were somewhere on camera, something like not my friend said I was here mm-hmm. or whatever. Nobody should be ruled out unless it's 100% that they can be ruled out. Not 99%, 100%. And I'll give you an example. The Katie Janis murder case, where she was stabbed over 50 times and her pit bull was killed. Mm-hmm. Okay. The police withheld evidence that they should have put out the first night, which was the killers carved in her body the words FAT, right? Mm-hmm. So right then that's telling me, okay, this is a personal killing. This is somebody she knows because they were able to get past the pit bull number one. Okay. But you could eliminate serial killer or spree killer. So now you know what you need to focus on. And that case is over a year old and it hasn't been solved. And in this situation, they're following the same pattern. I cannot believe, and it's physically impossible, they could have cleared that many people that quickly. Just can't be done.
Why would they do that then? Is it just inexperience in a town that hasn't had a murder since 2017?
That's part of it. But the other part of it is that murder cases today, it's unfortunate because of everything gets turned political in America. And I've seen this murder case after murder case is the police, even though they may want to just go strictly 100% on an investigative track, it's the elected officials and appointed officials make the situation political, which is they don't want to run away business. They don't want the kids to all leave the university. You know what I mean? They start thinking about money and other things rather than solving the crime. And that's what I'm seeing is going on right here. And that's why you have so many people out speculating, talking. I'm watching people on TV and it's like, really? The people that need to speak on this matter, they do need to know what they're talking about. And most of these people just do not have a clue.
What do the police and the authorities need to do at this point, based on your opinion and experiences, to try and get this thing more on track, at least in terms of to the general public, because on the outside, we look at this and it doesn't seem like it's very well on track. It feels like it's kind of gone off the rails. Internally, I think a lot of us are hoping maybe it is more on the rails than we're aware of, but that may be wishful thinking. How does this get righted?
Well, one is you need to take the evidence and put it in front of other people. OK, you need to bring in new investigators for a fresh start. You need to review every person again and clear them the proper way, which they haven't been done. Number three is drop your ego, drop the politics and process the case as you see on the law and order type situation. Bring in those New York City, those Detroit, those Atlanta, those Chicago investigators that are familiar with it, with murders, because they deal with them on a daily basis. Bring in outsiders, because I've heard a couple of people talk, one an ex NYPD detective, one ex FBI profiler, and they agree with what I'm saying, like, because they've had experience. And it's really different once you've had experience with this. You know it can't be going right. And the only way it's going to go right if you take it out of the hands of the people that have it now, because it's like trying to proofread your own paper, right?
Sure.
It never works out because you think you know what you wrote. That's why you always want to hand it off to someone else. And they have the evidence in front of them that solves the case. They've spoken to the person that committed the crime, but yet, even though that person, that evidence is right in front of their face, and this is in majority of the cases I was involved in, they just didn't see it because they came in with pre-conclusions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like when they're clearing people, well, that's a nice kid, I'll clear him. Basically, that's what they said.
But clearing doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot other than you're cleared at that moment in time. There's been plenty of cases where people have been cleared initially and then they go back and basically arrest them when they find more evidence. Is that a tactic that is typically used by law enforcement to almost put people more at ease so they go and live their life a little bit more while they observe these individuals and gather up enough evidence to make an arrest?
It can be, but in the majority of cases today, because murders become such an epidemic in America. And when you're talking about a case like this, where it's a small town, you have four people that were essentially butchered, and that person is still out there. Okay. You don't want to go that route. If they're actually going that route, that's a mistake, because that person could just go and start killing again. You don't want to do that. When you have a multiple homicide like this, you want that person off the street as soon as possible. You can always let them go if it's the wrong person, but you don't want to take that chance. We've seen how badly that can go. As I said, in the Johnny Versace case and the UC Santa Barbara case, you don't want to do that. I don't believe that's their strategy. I just believe that they're lost. As simple as that is exactly what it appears to be.
Do you feel that there is, and without trying to cause any sort of panic by any means, but just being vigilant, just being dealing with reality on reality terms, with someone like this, is there a risk? I mean, I'm sure in any case there could be a risk, but is there a likelihood that they would return to the same area to try and do more? Or do people like this typically leave the area and go off into the darkness, so to speak, for a time being?
No, it's a great risk. Serial killers and people like this, they're sociopaths, not psychopaths. That means 90% of serial killers, school shooters, mass shooters are perfectly sane. They're not crazy, which is criminally insane. They're not. It's a rarity that they are. These are people because of certain issues in their background, they're filled with hate, and they manifest that hate through violence, and they usually target women and children. And that's what you have going on right now. I bet you when they find this person played with fire as a kid, this person tortured animals, this person hates his mother, always going to be the case, has a big problem with women from day one. That's what the police should be acting on right there. See, those little clues And then if you put that out, people say, hold on, I remember so-and-so. Yeah, you know, he used to torture birds when he was little, or he's always playing with fire, and a warning bell goes off. And it's like, oh, well, you know, I saw him near the house a couple of weeks ago before the murder or whatever. That's the sort of information that needs to be put out. And what you have is a lot of information being put out by people who are calling themselves experts. And the way I put this is, it's like a person saying they're an expert combat pilot and they've never flown a plane, much less flown a plane in combat.
Sure.
Okay. Experience is what's important here. So you have these police officers that are not used to dealing with one murder, much less a quadruple murder. It's only natural. That's what I'm saying. It's not that they're, you know, necessarily bad people, but you become a detective in a major city by working cases. That's how you become good.
In your opinion, and we're not trying to name any names or anything like that. Do you feel that through the course of what we've seen so far in this case, do you think we've seen the killer come up as a suggestion on anything or in any evidence, videos, things of that nature? Or is this someone that we still really don't know the identity of?
Yeah, it's almost for certain that person returned to the scene of the crime. That person has been at vigils. That person has been at events. That person has been around to essentially see his work. He's laughing at the officers and investigation right now. Like I said, they've talked to him and ruled him out, and he's just sitting right there all the time, right in front of their face. And these guys are sociopathological in terms of they think themselves to be smarter than everyone else. He's just right now, he thinks he has everything figured out, everything. And yes, unfortunately, he's been talked to on more than one occasion.
That's going to wrap up this edition of Four Killed for What, the University of Idaho Murders podcast. It's a production of True Crime Today. You can download and listen to True Crime Today wherever you download podcasts for more on this story and other breaking true crime stories. Until next time, for Sean, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening to Four Killed for What.